Oh, fuck. This is the Token CEO podcast. This is episode 105. It is Thursday, November 19th. This podcast is presented by Macy's. The great thing about Macy's is you don't have to wait for Black Friday, which is a whole week plus from today. You can shop Black Friday sales now. I was just on Macy's eyeing. They have this like union suit, one piece pajama by Jenny. I've never heard of the Jenny brand, but I am all about it. I am going to be getting, ooh, it's velour. So I will be getting the one piece union suit pajama for a whopping low price of $24.99. The other thing that's actually very great is Macy's has Calvin Klein. So I like a wrap coat. A wrap coat, you can like put it over your spandex running pants and still look professional. That's like what I try to do when I travel, which is to just class the thing up as much as possible, even if it's not that classy underneath. That retails for $275 on Macy's. I can get it right now for $99. So it's pretty awesome. Net-net is the Black Friday sale is running now. These sales go through November 28th. When it goes, it goes. So it's only while supplies last. Long story short, you order online, you can go get it in the store, you can do curbside pickup, or you can have everything shipped to your house, whatever you want to do. Go to Macy's.com/tokenCEO to check out our fall fashion ideas. I have not added the union suit or the Calvin Klein wrap coat, but I will be adding those. And that's Macy's. So here's the deal for today's podcast. Today's podcast, we are talking all about commerce and digital. We have Gary Vee joining us. Everybody knows who Gary Vee is. My conversation with Gary Vee is not really just about the internet or about entrepreneurship. It's why he is going to own the New York Jets. And we get into why would anyone want to own the New York Jets, as well as what he thinks about women's sports and me owning a women's hockey team. And then we talk to Webb Smith. So Webb Smith is the founder of 2PM, which is a media company. It's a subscription service. He has a consultancy business. He is very, very vested in e-commerce. And what better time to talk about e-commerce than going into Black Friday and Cyber Monday? Before we get into that, let's just talk about the headlines. Instagram. I knew this was coming. The like Instagram people told me it was coming. I like sat on the Zoom call with this like lovely man from Britain and he was like, it's happening. The heart is becoming a shopping bag. The create button is becoming reels. And I like ha 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 made all these jokes about it. And then it happened to me. I'm like lost in my Instagram. I can't figure out how to put a story in there. I can't figure out how to add anything. I can't get away from like it wants me to share with other accounts. Anyways, we talk about it in this episode, but Instagram is very much turning into a mall. It is very much turning into a platform that wants to compete with TikTok with a product like Reels. Speaking of, Twitter's also getting into the game. So now we have Reels. We have TikTok and Twitter has fleets. Twitter's now becoming Instagram. So Twitter's like, oh, you're going to vacate that spot? Like, let me scooch in on over there. So like, while all the social media CEOs are like getting grilled in front of Congress with their beards and short haircuts and all of the like, I had one of my hockey cop friends text me the other day. He doesn't like very much follow social media. And he's like, God, those social media CEOs. I was like, yeah, I could see that from like your perspective. But anyways, so the CEOs are all in front of Congress defending why they're not ruining the world and stealing all of our data and suppressing people and limiting free speech and like suppressing conservatives, I guess. I don't know. So that's what the CEOs are doing. Meanwhile, the engineers back at the ranch over in California are just making products that look like other technology companies. What's fascinating about this is actually technology, as everybody knows, is supposed to innovate. What's funny in media is that media companies just copy one another. And now what you're seeing the social media companies do is essentially the same thing. So this is the fourth social media platform to roll out stories. Obviously, you had Snapchat, then you had Instagram and Facebook. Facebook and Instagram ripped off from Snapchat. Now you have Twitter ripping off from Instagram. So it's super interesting. Obviously, people want you as a consumer to spend more time shopping on their platforms and way more time watching video. I thought the most radical thing for Instagram was the removal of the create button. Like, I think that that's such a dramatic step whereby the emphasis is now to watch and not to create. Anyways, long story short, I bitched to Gaz about it like 15 times and he just didn't want to hear it. And he's like, the Instagram people aren't going to change it. So that's that. Change is hard for people and change is hard on social media. I am no exception. I do think it's interesting. It's also, you know, I think Instagram is kind of like a Rubik's Cube. Like, it's so interesting how the puzzle comes together and how all of the pieces work. And you can think you're in the red color and then you switch, you swipe, you click, you turn into the white color. So I think that the Instagram product is like breathtakingly sophisticated. I love that about it. I'm just clearly going to need to get used to it. So the other thing that's happening is everybody's waiting for the next wave. Not even waiting. They're just expecting to be put back on lockdown. So I get the Gaz alert. Gaz getting a lot of play in this podcast. Get the Gaz alert, which is just a text message of everything Governor Cuomo is doing or what's happening in the news or what's happening in Boston, all related to the coronavirus. Obviously, the coronavirus is on a tear. It's just like eating up all those college kids. Then those college kids are going to come home, spread it to everybody else. Everybody's going to have apartment parties, college parties. And the whole world is going to be back down, locked into their houses. So that seems to be a mathematical certainty. There's obviously the stock market isn't really reflecting that. Like, if you follow the stock market, everything seems like fairly glorious, even though it doesn't seem quite glorious at all. Our girl, Dolly Parton, huge fans of Dolly Parton on this podcast. Two things I learned about Dolly Parton this week. One is that she backed the Moderna vaccine by giving, I think, $1 million or $1 million or more to Vanderbilt, which was working on the Moderna vaccine. The Dolly Parton vaccine is now 94.5% effective, which is great. You love to see it. The other thing is Dolly Parton is going to pose for Playboy. I read that in a blog posted by Gay Pat on Barstool this week. And she will not be the oldest woman to pose in Playboy. So I was like, go, Dolly, go. So those are the big things happening in the news. I was in Chicago yesterday. I got to see the Blackhawks facility, which I have to say was just absolutely breathtaking. It was amazing. Like, where the players eat, the training facility. They had like 400 goalie sticks, the laundry facility, like the equipment room, the way they've organized the equipment room. I loved it. It was amazing. There was also this like big, glorious, freshly zambonied sheet of ice that no one was on. And I'm like practically like not listening to anyone from the Blackhawks organization, just drooling over the clean ice. But they were super hospitable. I was thrilled to be there. I got a pair of Kane socks. So the Blackhawk people have been paying attention to my new Kelly Babstock Velcro things that keep your socks pulled up so they don't fall around your ankles and apparently makes you play better. But so anyways, I've got a new pair of socks, which I'm excited about. The other thing that was just so cool was that a team let us in like that. And like, we had such an interesting conversation about growing the brands of players and growing a team. You know, it's hard for the Blackhawks. They compete in a massive sports market. They have the legend of Michael Jordan. They've got two baseball teams. They've got a football team. They've got a big city with a lot of culture, and they're like trying to fight for relevance, and they're starting to think about how do they do that? How do they embrace the personalities that they have? How do they embrace the community? They're at the Malcolm X Center. Like, it's just kind of like an amazing setup. I was super impressed. And I also think that they understand where they are in the sports ecosystem in Chicago and the marketing ecosystem. They're obviously not at the top of their game record-wise, so they're using this time to think about how they promote themselves, their team, their city in a different way, and I'm just all about that. So that was a thrill. Huge thanks to Barstool Chief. So if you don't follow Barstool Chief, You might want to give him a try. He set the whole thing up. I was so impressed. I literally show up at the practice facility, and there was like a guy in a mask and like dressed in a nice pea coat and pants. And I was like, oh my God, that's Chief. Like, that guy works for me. I was just so impressed. He like crushed it. So anyways, huge shout out to Barstool Chief and to the Blackhawks for being so hospitable to us. Before we get into Gary and Webb, let's just talk for a second about CBDMD. It doesn't matter if you play for the Blackhawks, if you're a stay-at-home parent, you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Speaking of, I'm realizing I think my office chair is too short, but I don't bother to fix it, which I don't know. It's probably like some like insecurity placing out that I don't really have a seat at the table or something. But anyways, everybody needs support to make it through the day. Our friends at CBDMD, that's CBDMD, they have an amazing duo of topical products that they can help you relax, they can help you regroup, and they can help you recharge when life gets chaotic. So you can try two products that I like, the CBD Recover and the CBD Freeze with menthol. The cool thing about the CBD Freeze is it cools your muscles and joints, and the CBD Recover, it combines CBD with compound histamine dihydrochloride. Bet you didn't think I could say that. Which relieves minor aches and pains. Last weekend, I ran 10 miles. I had a lot of minor aches and pains, I would say, and I put CBD cream all over my legs, and it was awesome. So if you go to CBDMD and use code TOKEN, that's CBDMD.com, and use code TOKEN, you can get 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD. All right. Next up is Gary V. I've known Gary for a long time. I have so much respect for what Gary V does. I like that he sticks to his take. I think he is incredibly consistent, and I love that he has a big dream to own the Jets. So we're going to hear all about it.
The wind blows hard against this mountainside, across the sea into my soul.
Gary V, how's it going?
It's great, Erica. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you. What's shaking? You doing all right?
Yeah. You know, just kind of like, it's so weird to have like a work day while I know the election's like in limbo in the background. So it was a weird day, but all good.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's coming up. Yes.
When is it? Today or tomorrow?
No, 10 days. November 14th.
Oh, I'm November 6th.
Hmm. I like that, Scorpio life.
Friday. I'm like hoping this shit is done by now.
So it's your 25th?
Yes.
Friday?
Yes.
Let's get right into it because I have a hard stop.
Okay, great. All right. Hit me about the Jets. You're going to buy the Jets?
I am.
I heard like in 27 years. That seems like a long time horizon for you.
It is, but I don't amass wealth the way like a hedge fund or a VC or a Uber founder. Like, I have pretty good self-awareness. I think I've got the capabilities of getting to that crazy level of financial success, but I just know I won't do it fast. And I just have to hope that the Johnson family's ready to transact when I'm ready to be able to afford it. And, you know, 20 to 30 years feels right.
Are you insistent that it's all your money?
You know, the NFL's got some pretty hardcore restrictions around, like, you've got to have a pretty, I think I'm going to have to amass some serious wealth. This is not going to be something I'll be able to finance. I mean, look, if I am unable to achieve it and the NFL's in a place where I can be part of a conglomerate, I need to be able to hire the GM. That is important to me. So, for example, if the Jets decide to transact in 3 years, and some billionaire comes along and wants to buy it, and she or he hits me up and says, Gary V, you know, like, I'm going to do this, but I'd love for you to be part of my buying team. But, you know, you only have to put up $25 million and you got a small sliver. It's very unlikely that I'll do that. I don't want to be the Jay-Z of the Jets.
Yeah, like, you want to have a meaningful ownership stake.
I want it to be my next chapter of my, like, I want this to be.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, so, you know, but, you know, you don't get everything you want in life. I'm just going to try to focus on executing the parts I can control. There's just a whole lot of serendipity that goes along with having the timing line up.
Totally. All right. I'm trying to buy a women's hockey team. What's your advice to me as someone who's clearly given a lot of thought to team ownership? Like, what makes a good team owner? What do you look for? What kind of control do you want? Like, give me the Gary V.
Well, I think
advice, you know, special.
I think for you, if you go into that realm, and I've looked at a lot of women's sports teams because I think it's interesting. I mean, I'm blown away by some of the potential opportunities in softball, volleyball, soccer, proper, aka proper football, and women's hockey. Your biggest difference to me looking at the things I look at is you're going to need to elevate the sport, not just the team.
Correct.
Now, I believe you being the CEO of a company that I think has a platform to be able to actually pull that off makes, I mean, you're a smart operator. I've known you a long time. So I think your balance is you're going to have to be the Lamar Hunt, right? Or the Al Davis. So you're going to have to be not just an owner of a team. You're going to need to put the organization, the whole league on your back.
Yeah, it needs to be put on the map. Like if you think about women's hockey, right? Like it's actually very interesting. Like I love that you bleed the Jets. You've always bled the Jets. Like you are ridiculous about it, but in the most endearing, prideful, humble way, right? Which I think you have to be to love the Jets. But you do, and like I am so hopeful for you that is your next chapter. I can't imagine it not. I think you can will anything to happen. And
I think it's going to happen. I genuinely believe it's going to happen. But I understand. Keep going because I'm excited about your point, which I think is going to be a good one.
So, I think the interesting thing for me about women's hockey is it's basically nowhere, right? Like you've got a players association, you've got a small nascent league. There's no real broadcast deal. There's no real sponsorship. There's no scaled media operation around it. There's no production. There's no marketing. There's no merch strategy. Like there's just, it's like Barstool 2016 in that it's very real. There's very loyal followers. It stands for something. It is something. All that needs to happen is like the lid needs to blow off of it.
But the lid needs to blow off where the league needs a Dana White, a Vince McMahon, a Al Davis, like for example, and we work with Comcast at VaynerMedia. So, we had the luxury of working with the Lamaro twins and things of that nature. So I know a little bit more about women's hockey than probably, let's say, the average player.
Yeah.
So, and I looked a little bit into the league, a little bit, the nascent league. And then we just won a bunch of Clio awards for our Budweiser work on the women's stock. Right. So I've actually, and I'm wearing my version one. I have ownership with the Minnesota Vikings, ownerships in the esports leagues with Call of Duty and Rocket League. So I'm like starting the process. And ironically, and honestly, I may hit you up offline, like women's leagues are very interesting to me. I think there's real play over the next 50 to 100 years. And I like legacy like that. I like my grandkids being like, man, grandpa was really smart how he saw this. I think it takes innovation. So for example, I think the women's league may have to take a WWE model and travel. I'm not sure that eight teams with eight home ices, correct. So if that's one idea. Maybe that's right or wrong.
Or it's it's kind of like the PLL, right, with the Ravens. Like they've done a good job of creating the festival. WWE murders the touring circus, right?
They crush
the touring spectacle.
Yep.
I actually think the pandemic is one of the most massive opportunities for women's hockey because a bubble for something people don't yet know that they should care about or want to care about is a way to concentrate and create heat.
Smart. And then honestly, something that you and I talked to you about it at the time that I thought was brilliant, which is backyard fighting. Like I think everything's OTT. And do I think you, the human, like if you hit me up tomorrow and be like, hey, I'm doing this. Like, do you want to own one of the teams? And obviously that's very high risk capital, but knowing that you're thinking bubble, circus, festival, or whatever life, comma, knowing that where I know you definitely know is the pay-per-view OTT new way of doing things is upon us. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you got something. You add a third element of a sponsor to give you a little bit of bankroll and you're kind of quote unquote on your way. And then it becomes Conor McGregor, it becomes Ortiz.
Build the character.
Correct.
You can build the. That's what I'm excited.
When Hulk Hogan and The Rock are going in the and Stone Cold, wrestling's up here. When they're not, it's down here. Right. When Conor and Ronda Rousey are up here, MMA was going, Ortiz and all that. It's going. It's it really, when the Olympics have Carl Lewis or Michael Phelps, it's like we are in a star culture. Yes. And if you can get, you know, when Nadal and Federer and Djokovic are gone, and if men's tennis goes through a lull, like it's all the same game. Tiger, Phil, I'll keep giving analogies. So all you need to do is Dana White, Vince McMahon, one female hockey player, and get America slash the world to care.
Yes, that's right. I agree with that. You can help me with it.
What I've really thought a lot about women's sports because it's a really tricky one.
It is.
Because you look at the W, you know, like I think a lot about it. I think about the WNBA, I think about all this, because it's, as you can tell, it's been on my mind. And it's a tricky thing because I think the biggest mistake is everyone's done too much of a male model on it.
I think that, so I agree with you. I think the assumption, this pisses me off, that a women's league has to be a sister to a men's league, I think is bullshit. I think
I think women naturally bring things to the table that men don't, but some of them are very difficult to play on. So if the formats are the same and all that's the same, then the next question becomes off the field, right? And so for example, you know, nobody wants to run a women's league that also focuses on the Anna Kournikova aspect, because like, you know, getting male fans out of beauty and attractiveness of female players, it doesn't feel very 2021.
Right.
Comma, I really think it needs to almost become influencer marketing. Uh-huh. And you just have to get America to care. Maybe this woman is also a teacher. Maybe then that's what captures the Christy McCollum.
Beat the shit out of the next girl. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like you can
create. To your point.
I actually agree with that. The things that I resent about the marketing of women, like I feel it for myself as well, which is they should be demure, they should be pretty, they should be good, right? This whole notion of good. And yeah. I think that that's, I think sometimes.
Or the reverse, the world you play in, which is she's a badass fucking, she just happens to be a fucking unbelievable CEO. She's a badass. You
know, like,
to me, it's about authenticity. If a girl, a woman, a lady, is a badass, then that needs to be the story. If she actually
can be all those things,
well, that's the point. I feel that a lot of women stay away from showing some of the feminine right. side as an athlete because they don't want to be the Anna Kournikova.
Right. Exactly. And I think
it's a tricky. It's a very.
It is.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, and they're also not encouraged to be extreme because I think the biggest issue in marketing right now is the fear of the extreme, right? Whereby you can play it safe, you play it in the middle, you're never going to lose a sponsor, your broadcast part, your coach is never going to yell at you, you're through. People are systematized right yes. now, and that's why we're getting like legions of people who look the same, dress the same, act the same, conform the same, which is what's, you know, we're in an era of influencer marketing or personality marketing or star marketing. It's harder and harder to get the stars.
Well, because the attention's amortized.
Correct.
Right? It's amortized. I actually think people look a lot, I think it's a little bit of, here's what I would say. It is very clear to me that somebody, hopefully you, will come along and find the format, the playbook that actually, it is clear to me that running a women's league the way men leagues are run will not work.
Correct. I would agree with
that. The quality of the WNBA product is enormously high. The fact that that league is in the situation that it's in gives me triple affirmation to my belief that you can't do it exactly the same way. There's the normal subconscious tendency, and like, even though 2020 is very woke, men and women are different, mm-hmm. but nobody, I think, is going to lean into, you know, we saw it actually. What am I talking about? We saw it, that lingerie football league, right? Like that's
totally.
Like, I don't think anybody wants to go there. What I'm looking for is the freedom for, if somebody can create a culture around a women's league where the women can go all the way on who they are, all the way. You want to be considered a beauty icon, like truly a sex symbol,
go for it.
Then it's safe in this league for you to go and be risque.
You can have all the archetypes. The
correct. Correct. You want to, it's almost like GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yes.
Big Mama, Tough One. Then Sally, I mean, Sally the Farmer's Daughter, like, made me a man. That was like the perfect age. I was like, wait a minute, what is that? Why do I feel these feelings? So like, I think when I think back to that show, and I think it was redone up for Netflix in a different way, like, and a documentary about it for people that want to know, I think that that intuitively feels right. And then the question becomes the following, which is how much, I mean, for example, I can't believe how much softball I watch clicking the channels. ESPN, I mean, it's been on forever now. I don't know the ratings, the data, but clearly softball does strong enough for ESPN has kicked off a lot of things off their networks. They're not there for fun and games. They're not there because they want to support women. Softball rates. So, you know, when you look at global volleyball, right? Women's volleyball. To me, I just think we're on the precipice of it. I really believe in it. When people talk about the next generation, I'm always like MMA, proper football, soccer, esports, basketball, those sports are set up really well for the next 50 years. But every time I say it in interviews and things of that nature, I'm always like, man, if I was going to make real money, like back to Grandpa Was a Genius, if I'm going to put in 250 into something, little money, it's a lot of money, I don't want to downplay it,
yeah,
but
I got you.
For sport, if I'm going to put 250,000 into something that in 80 years is worth 400 million, it is a 100% a female sports league. I believe that all the way.
That's great to hear. How do you think about football, right? So you're talking about
American football?
American football.
I think it's clear. I think American football is where baseball was 30 years ago. It is clearly the big, it's an enormous sport.
Yeah.
There's nothing like the Super Bowl. But it's hard for me not to think intuitively that when I buy the Jets in 22 years, that the NFL will not be on the same pedestal it's been for the last two decades, which is the number one sport.
And does that worry you, or do you think that's an opportunity?
I think it's an opportunity. I think, A, it's my passion. I made myself a promise in third grade that I'm going to buy the Jets. And if football is not that big anymore, I don't care.
You don't care. You're like, I'm going to fucking own the Jets.
In 25 years, I mean, look at baseball now. Like, Cohen just bought the Mets. Like, football's not going to, like, everyone's like, football will be dead in 25 years. I'm like, guys, football will be a bigger sport than baseball is today in 25 years in America, so it'll be still just fine. Now, will the NBA be bigger? Yes. Will soccer in the macro be bigger? Yes. Will the UFC / MMA be bigger? Probably. Will esports kind of be bigger? Yes. Like that. Like it could and very may well be. It doesn't worry me. And to your point, I'd love to be 22. You know, in 22 years, I'm 67. Honestly, I think I'm spending too much time with 80 and 90 year old businessmen and women. Like it feels, I'm going to have plenty of fucking energy. Actually, how old is Mark Cuban right now? Let's look.
Mark Cuban's young. He's probably sub 50. Is he sub 50 or early 50s?
Let's see. He is 62.
All right. So he seems young because he's
about. But see, I love that that just happened, right? So look, 67-year-old me is going to be completely on fire, and I'm going to come to the NFL and be like, I'm going to put you guys and gals on my back, and I'm going to rebrand. I'm going to help.
Let's go. Wait. So Gary Vee, here's my question for you, which is, talk about the Mets transfer of ownership. Like, what do you see in that? What do you learn from it?
I know very little about it. I don't know a lot about Cohen, but what I know is new ownership from. Is always invigorating, exciting to watch. You know, I just have been so busy, so I'm just a little undereducated on him, his background, but I know my Met friends are fucking fired up.
Yeah, the Met people are fired up.
I know that he's quite wealthy, which should be able to help the team do some real damage. That sport, that is a factor. Raising my son a Met fan, even though I grew up a Yankee fan, so I'm happy for him potentially.
Do you think that there, look, one of the things I like about you owning the Jets is there needs to be, I think there's a new type of owner, right? There's new types of wealth, there's new types of owners, there's new type, like Cuban is a new, a yes. Next gen owner, right? Gary Vee would be a next gen owner. Dave Portnoy would be a next gen owner,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's my only thing with the Mets is that, like, look, good for the Wilpons. take the biggest amount of money, like make it happen, whatever. But there was something to Mike Rapoli, Jennifer Lopez, yeah. Alex Rodriguez that it is invigorating culturally.
Baseball might be the one place where just the sheer wealth of this gentleman, at least of what I heard, again, I haven't done any homework, may be enough.
Yes.
If you look at the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Yankees, I would argue that baseball is the fakest sport. I do think it is the closest thing to real business. Mm-hmm. And I know here comes, what about Tampa Bay? And I get it. Yeah. But what about the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers over the last 20 years? What about that? And so, like, and I know baseball's done farm system, young players, with arbitration and all that, you can build real franchises. I get it. But let's not be remiss to understand that money well spent in baseball is
a pretty money well spent.
Is money well spent. Yeah, and there is no salary cap, period, end of story. It is a very big likelihood that his wealth is stronger than the group that was trying to go after it. The Mets, I agree with you from like a pizzazz and energy standpoint.
Knowing
the Mets fan base, yeah. I have a funny feeling consistently being in the playoff for the next 25 years, give it 3 years, is going to probably be something they're going to be happy about.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Gary Vee, I have 9 minutes with you. I want to switch gears. Tell me why you think LinkedIn is such a great place to grab audience. And do you think LinkedIn is a place where our bloggers should be, or I should be? Like, give me your point of view. I think you have an interesting point of view on LinkedIn.
I realized recently that my strength is understanding not only social media and attention, but the difference between organic and paid reach. I'm extremely good at doing, and Vayner thus is, at doing creative and media together to drive results And the reason I've talked so much about LinkedIn for the last 18 to 24 months is the same reason I've talked about TikTok, which is these platforms have enormous organic reach. So everybody listening right now who's a 25-year-old Erica and Gary that has something in them
right.
that nobody knows can literally write a LinkedIn post right now and have 6,000 people read it. And then get an email saying, hey, I'd love for you to work for me at the Blackhawks or at ESPN or at Time Warner or at P&G or whatever. So I'm blown away by LinkedIn's organic reach, and I'm blown away by the fact that you can now produce content of any type and manner. Like literally if you're selling hoodies for a streetwear brand, creating a LinkedIn account and posting creative on that platform is a good idea.
Yeah, it's just free. It's free.
It's just free attention. You got it.
That's right.
So yes, I think it's a huge play for you for B2B. Like you just giving observations. Like you sit at the top of an organization that is such a good deal for so many brands, but they have to get over themselves on political correctness or things of that nature. And so you educating through blog posts are going to reach more media buyers and CEOs and procurement.
Yeah, you have there's a disproportionate advantage. We see it with TikTok, right? We can grow our TikTok surpassed our Twitter in under 2 years because there's an accelerant.
My career, when it's analyzed, will be like, this guy understood when to get into platforms early and extract attention. And he built his notoriety, fame, whatever they're going to call it, with no money by being quicker to know when this was happening.
Attention.
That's what I do for a living.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with that. Okay. My last thing is trading cards.
Yes. I mean, that's such
You're a fun obsessed. Segue.
I'm obsessed for the same reason of what we just talked about. I grew up with trading cards like many people, but I grew up with video games and candy and a million other things, right? Early hip hop, like 3 years ago, because I pay attention to attention. I'm like, uh-oh. Something's happening because I am what I call a post-creative strategist. I'm very good at reading all the comments about everything all the time. I'm an anthropologist. And I'm like, why are the, and this is, talk about a platform that should go all in.
Yeah, no.
Your permission to win, it came from your world. Like what I would call the Barstool crowd and a slightly, not older, the older echelon of the Barstool crowd started talking enough about sports cards where I'm like, what's going on? And then on a personal level, my 8-year-old son 2 years ago was starting to get into it at 6. And that of course is a common vibe, perfect, that thing. And that, here's what happened. The sneaker flipper kids needed inventory because sneakers got tough. The gambling community realized, wait a minute, I can make more money if I do sports cards than just gambling. The 45-year-old dad that has 7-year-old community, their 7-year-old got interested, and that's classic.
It's generational.
That's right, classic generational. And finally, the 45-year-old, quite wealthy individual doesn't want to buy Jackson Pollock and like Sotheby's like rare art. They want to buy a $500,000 Michael Jordan rookie card because the casualization, the hip hop urban, the dress down of high net worth 40-year-olds is now moving into, I don't want to have a douchey 1830s cup that I bought at Sotheby's for $5 million in my apartment. I want you to come over and see the only Charizard PSA 10.
It makes me cool.
The same reason Bob Kraft wears cool Nikes
is
the same reason that 50-year-olds are going to buy $300,000. It's already happened. Yeah. I predicted 3 years ago, Logan Paul does buy X. Logic the rapper does buy Y. Like, this has happened. LeBron's talking about his rookie. Like, I would argue, actually, you know what, Erica? I would tell you that the people that most think I'm a douche, don't like me the most, least are into me, least thought I was good, out of that whole crew, I've gotten the most accolades for nailing the sports card thing because it felt 3 years ago so left field, and it has so actually happened.
Yes.
Yeah, so you can imagine it's a definitely one that I'm happy about for sure.
Good for you. All right, Gary, I always love seeing you. I wish you all the best. I will root for you and the Jets till the cows come home. So you keep me posted.
I'm always here for you. Thank you for being on. And everybody who's on listening to the podcast, thank you so much. If I could ever be a help, I love karma, so hit me up.
Bye, Gary V.
Bye, everyone. Thanks, everybody, on the team that's on this. See ya.
All right, I'm inserting a read into this podcast. So it was so awesome. The other night I presented to, there's a company out there called Axon. They make tasers. Super impressive company. They're like the biggest tech company nobody's heard of. They supply body cameras and weapons to police officers, local law enforcement, military all around the world. Super interesting company. I'm like blown away by them. And I think their vision for a bulletless future is really interesting. They're also a company that's trying to figure out how they navigate a brand in a really tough, turbulent, controversial time. And like most brands, they're trying to figure out, you know, when do we stake our claim? When do we stay silent? When do we engage? How do we engage? Who do we engage with? So anyways, long story short, awesome meeting. They're coming on as a sponsor of a few of our podcasts. They have a product called the Strike Light. So for anyone, I think is really great for women. So if you live in New York City or you live in a major metropolitan area, and like New York City right now, there's like no lights on, no bars open, and homeless people everywhere. The Strike Light is a high intensity flashlight. So it's super high powered flashlight. And it has a stun gun capability so that if you get attacked, it can repel your attacker. So I know it sounds crazy to have. You would not catch me in a million years carrying a gun anywhere. So I think it's a great option. I also think about all these girls on college campuses or living in apartments around campus. Nothing is open. Things aren't happening late at night. Crime is on the rise. And like, how do you think about protecting yourself? Like, I'm not one to carry pepper spray, but many people do. So you can go to taser.com and find yourself a Strike Light. It's like $129. You get 15% off with code Barstool. Okay. Next up is my convo with Webb.
So what is 2PM?
2PM is a B2B media company for the commerce industry. So we are one part subscription media, one part consultancy, one part holding company for our angel investments.
Okay. So are you like the Skift of B2B commerce? Is that your aspiration?
I really appreciate that comparison. I love that organization. I love Rafat. I would say eventually I think we'll get there. They're much bigger, much more powerful, but we're scrappy and we're bootstrapping it.
And where you guys are based where?
Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. Okay. And how many people work for 2PM?
So,
why is it called 2PM?
So 2PM is sort of a double entendre. It's short for two polymaths. I believe that the best people in digital industries are the ones that are deep generalists, people that understand all industries and how they interact. It also sends at 2 p.m. Eastern 3 days a week.
Okay, got it.
So,
okay, it works on both levels.
It does.
Okay. And how did you get into commerce?
Well, full circle. My first big boy job was heading marketing at Rogue. Rogue is, I would say, probably the largest direct-to-consumer fitness equipment manufacturer in the country. And it was sort of a gift. I was in Austin, living the life in Austin, and they said, "Hey, come to Ohio." And I was like, "There's no way
you're getting, I love Ohio.
There's no way you're getting me to move to Ohio from Austin, Texas." And at the time, it was money. It was like serious money to me. I'm like, "All right, I'll be there next week."
Yep.
And I just never left.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you love it there now.
I just never left.
Poor Ohio. The Midwest. Just
it's
is
Columbus
tough.
Is great. Columbus is great. And it's been
Columbus
great to raise
great.
Our daughters. But, yep. You know, it's I'm a coastal guy. I like the water. And so I spend a lot of money on travel to work on the coasts.
Okay. But your cost of living is so low that you could probably you can do that.
Yeah, we find interesting ways to make the cost of living not low, but we have the option to have cheaper living, yes.
Okay, and what do you think the most interesting trends right now in commerce are?
Oh, wow. Obviously, your organization is leading the charge in media companies that are monetizing in alternative ways, whether it's commerce, intellectual property. I can only imagine you guys are going to get into real estate. I'm really excited to see that. On the flip side, you know, there's a large e-commerce company that I've partnered with to consult, and they're launching their own media company. Hmm. And I'm in charge of building out that vertical over the next year with the team that we'll pick. So you're seeing sort of, I call it linear commerce. You're seeing sort of like the intersection of media and commerce walking along this line. And that line is where every other company is going to exist in the next 10 years. And you're ahead of the curve. Everyone else is going to get there over the next decade.
Yeah, it's interesting. When the e-commerce people tried to become media people.
It's hard.
It is hard. Do you think it's easier to go our way? I think it's easier to go our way, obviously.
There's one caveat. You have a loyal audience. Mm-hmm. I'll be frank. You know, I had the pleasure of working at Uncrate, and we built e-commerce there. And it's working like gangbusters because the audience is really, really loyal. Mm-hmm. Traffic and loyalty are not one and the same.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
I think it's taken people way too long to realize that.
Yes. And so at the next place where I was, we had the traffic, 5x the traffic that Uncrate had.
Mm-hmm.
We had no loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Commerce was way harder. It was way more frustrating for me. The ROI wasn't there. I got a lot of complaints because things weren't performing the way they were. And God bless them. The only thing I could say was they're not here for the brand that you built.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of like BuzzFeed. So BuzzFeed was such an early leader for media companies in commerce. Now, in my opinion, what they did is they just took the listicle, or they had so much tonnage, and they put it to cute products, or they were crafty in the creation of the product.
Yes.
That they made it. I don't think people are out there living and dying by BuzzFeed, but they did a good job of what very few companies can do, which is, or what a lot of traditional media companies could do, very few digital companies, I think, can do, where they use their tonnage to drive Tasty and a whole host of other brands. I actually think that the boutiqueness of, or the tribalness of commerce is actually going to ultimately usurp and buck that trend. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. You know, going back to your BuzzFeed point, tonnage is a great word. They have so much volume that you see the effects in the shopping cart, right?
Yeah.
Like you see it because they have so much volume. But even BuzzFeed, relative to their volume, has very little loyalty when it comes to...
Yeah, there's no loyalty.
Right. And so I can imagine if a company ever gets to that size, if and when a company ever gets to that size volume-wise, with the type of loyalty that you have.
Well, then it becomes very exciting.
Then it, you're talking about something that can move, you know, 8-9 figures in commerce.
Oh, 100%. You know, it's interesting when you look at it. Like, I think the commerce space is so interesting, and I'm like really curious to get your opinion on it. So I think it's interesting for the following reasons. One is I think Instagram is becoming a mall. Like, the heart is going to be replaced by a shopping bag. Like, truly, and the cultural implication of that, I think, is very interesting. But Instagram becomes a mall. Like, before we started this interview, we're talking about one of your brands. Like, I personally have a distrust of anything I see on Instagram that it's low quality. I get hit with either things that I have zero chance of ever affording, or I feel like I'm buying like a ninja t-shirt that is just going to have like low, terrible quality to it.
Yes, I understand.
So something interesting is happening with Instagram, where Instagram is going to become the mall. I think the second thing that's happening, really born out of gaming, is there is something to building tribal audiences. We obviously were at the forefront of that. Dave Portnoy built a tribal audience starting in 2004, really. So, like, we're one of the oldest companies doing that. But the way you see 100 Thieves thinking about merch.
Major. Mischief.
Way Mischief thinks about merch. Even the YouTubers, you know, I think the interesting thing about the YouTubers, like in the landscape of it all, is that YouTube could have been such a massive commerce platform if it had enabled its creators to transact on YouTube the way Instagram is letting creators transact on Instagram, and the way TikTok will enable people to transact. So it's almost like YouTube missed the boat there in a lot of ways, because from any YouTuber I've ever seen or worked with, you had to go off platform to make your money.
Yeah, I think Teespring tried to do something there. I think the writing's on the wall, and eventually Shopify will try to find an integration where you can do it in line with the actual video. But even that, I don't think will be enough, mainly because I think that a lot of these YouTubers are beyond sophisticated at this point, and they've done such a great job of porting their audiences to different platforms that they want their stores to be independent of the platform itself. You know, you have 17-year-olds making $3 million a month on merch.
Like, completely.
You know?
Completely. Yeah, and they don't have to cut the platform in. Like, that's what I think is Instagram's enjoying it because they're not taking a cut right now. The minute they start to take a cut, people will resent the cut and go look to exploit commerce elsewhere. We're fortunate in that we have a direct-to-consumer business and we have an O&O, so we have an owned and operated property. YouTubers never had that. And that's, to me, what's also going to be interesting is when you look at the TikTokers and the YouTubers, how are they building media properties that can stand the test of time? Because the other thing, and I'll like get a word in edgewise, the other thing that I think is interesting is the platform standards are changing.
Okay.
So the most electric people on any platform are the people naturally who are most on the edge, right? And so the platforms are so like in their shorts about community guidelines that they're squeezed, and there's so much pressure for a PC pressure, I would say, is that they're squeezing the people that make the juice.
So what you're saying is the next great brand is going to be built on Parler.
Possibly. That's it. What do you think about Parler?
I haven't personally checked it out. Obviously, I'm a pretty down the middle guy, so I have friends on sort of both sides, and I have a lot of friends that love Parler. I think it should be taken seriously.
I mean, if you look today at the top four downloaded apps, they're all like every conservative on the planet is flocking to MeChat. Like there's four dominant apps.
I think I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe at some point, even the platforms that are all about freedom of speech will have to have community guidelines.
Oh, like, but it's like already happening.
Something will happen, and the platform will be responsible for that thing happening, and then you have to put guidance in place to make sure that people know they can't say just anything that they want on those platforms. That being said, I can't speak to the other ones, but I think Parler is viable, and I think that there will come a point probably in the next 2 to 4 months where, like, if brands, Black Rifle Coffee, for instance, or even you guys, if brands aren't paying attention to it, and at least trying to build presences there, then they're going to be missing out on mm-hmm. a large, obviously a very large cross section
mm-hmm.
of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think that, look, it's like, I spend so much time thinking about Instagram versus TikTok, right? Like, so Instagram is, Facebook is overtaking Instagram. It's no longer an independent entity within Facebook. They have a very strong point of view about community guidelines. Mm-hmm. We have, for the last 3 years, seen viral videos grow our brand in like a crazy way. The guys running over one another with golf carts, the Bill's Mafia crew like slamming one another tables. Into like yeah. tomato sauce on a table. Like, and now you can't do that. I mean, I've used this example before. We have a Chicago guy, Carl, who was like screaming about the kicker for the Bears. He got kicked off of Instagram for bullying. And he's talking about a professional athlete. So yeah. like the community, the noose of community guidelines is strengthening. What I think it is also doing, though, is it's taking the content that's cheapest and most electric, and it's not giving audiences what they want. Parler is giving conservative audiences what they want,
mm-hmm.
a platform where there is, you know, at this point anyways, there's some perception that there's no censorship.
Right. It'll last for a while.
It'll last for a while yeah. until they have to grow up and commercialize right. and right. then raise more money. And then people are going to be like, well, are you going to let them yeah. say all that? Like, yep. that's like the natural.
That's the progression.
That's the progression.
Right.
So I think then the question always comes back to the same thing, which I'm curious for you, which is, do you always have to build a home base?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I think so that's too. The thing that you have accomplished here. It's sort of what I said about the young creators, you know, when TikTok was vulnerable earlier, it's like, oh, we're just going to move to Triller, or, hey, follow me here in the mm-hmm. meantime. You know, they've gotten so great at saying, you're my loyal audience. You're going to follow me wherever mm-hmm. I go. That doesn't happen unless you have a home base.
Mm-hmm.
Now for creators,
no, it does happen, but you just can't.
You can't be consistent.
Over time, right. you lose 10% every right. time you right. leave or whatever.
If they had their own media serving site that could
why
post videos.
Why don't more of them do that?
I think it's going to come. I mean, to your point, I think, you know, there are some great folks in my ecosystem. Dave Nimitz founded Bleacher Report and a few other great publications. Jared Dickers at Washington Post. We have these conversations all the time about the future of media. And more media companies should take the cues from creators, but at the same time, creators should take cues from media companies like yours. Eventually, the smartest ones will say, okay, this is my platform.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I host will be here. I'm independent of YouTube, Vimeo, Triller, TikTok, you name it. Everything will be hosted here. I have my own servers. Mm-hmm. If you want to join, you can be hosted here too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's our new marketplace yep. for our ideas.
Yep.
That's going to happen. Because, especially with how well capitalized a lot of them are right now.
See, I don't disagree. I think most of these guys and girls are chasing money and fame when really what they need to be thinking about is chasing data. And it's when they realize that they start chasing the data, everything will change.
Well, I mean, to their credit, I was definitely poor midways into my 20s. So I don't personally know what it's like to be able to say I'm making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month as an 18-year-old.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, if I were in their shoes, I'd like be chasing money and fame
whatever,
too, no doubt.
You don't think it's going to come to an end. You don't think that anything mm-hmm. can sort of unseat you. And you probably don't have the mentorship or guidance to make those moves in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate.
Do you think – but that's where I think that the commerce people are going to create the wave for it, right? Like when you look at new stars in Hollywood or in Los Angeles, like they're counseled by the former television people, the former like movie people. Now they're counseled by the Netflix people or the brand people. But I think once the good Ohioans like come on to the scene,
listen,
it's going to change everything.
You know, I don't need the credit for anything, but one thing I do love is building whatever's next. And if any of those folks ever wanted to strategize on what I've studied and what I think should happen, and obviously what you think should happen, I think that the industry and themselves will be better for it. And I hope that that happens. I think that commerce is the future of all digital industries. It started with ads and impressions, and eventually everything will only be measured in conversions. Like, that's how everyone will be measured. How well can your message, your words, your creation convert to sale? Mm-hmm. Right?
What do you think? So you wrote an interesting piece last week on Supreme.
Yes.
So I share the same view about Supreme. I think Supreme.
A lot of people disagree with me.
Really?
Yeah, I got a lot of pushback on that.
You cannot go to the same company selling stuff to Walmart and be special.
Listen, the thing about living in Columbus, Ohio, is that I'm at the epicenter of specialty retail. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about DSW, L Brands, Tween Brands, you name it. It's all headquartered there. And I know how vulnerable the city is because of that. You know, all these are all the companies that are going bankrupt because Class B and Class C malls are
DOA.
Vanishing. And so that structure, when you are bought by VF Corp, you're going to be a mall store.
That's what they know.
Yeah, like that's what they do. So it's I don't understand how people don't see the negatives in that future for Supreme.
See, I was thinking that I'm not a Supreme buyer, but I am a student of Supreme. I think Supreme is the way that they created, the way they captivate people around their drops is amazing and is replicated. They're the gold standard. If you look at what like Nelk is doing and all those other guys, like Supreme was a gold standard in that.
Yep.
And who knows what shoes you're in as a founder, and you're probably like, fuck it, I want to monetize, I want to transact.
And they have that right.
And they do, and they earned it.
Me
too. I'm like, you get yours, good for you. Yep. Go live on, go buy 15 islands or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing that's interesting, like I look at a brand like Moncler, I think Moncler actually is a brand that's interesting, or like what David Grutman is doing with Prince, right? Where private equity comes in, buys a brand. In Moncler's case, it's fairly mass. It's mass luxury, luxury, luxury. They've done a good job with their Genius line of like keeping it avant-garde and keeping it weird.
They've made it even more luxury than it was.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's almost though, when you look at Supreme, like we went through this. We did this ridiculous deal, which I regret. Like I regret in my like grit my teeth like every single day, where we did a deal where we licensed out Saturdays for the Boys.
To who?
Against my better judgment, to like a third party licensor. And we had some very, very specific rules about where they could use it. Could they use the Barstool marks, which they could not. And of course they were like, fuck you, I'm putting this in every BJ's imaginable. And you saw our brand, which we used to be cool and used to mean something, on the shelf next to, you know, in a crap table and a very bad display. And of course they put the Barstool brand all over it. And it was such an erosion of brand value. And once you erode a brand value like that, you're fucked. It's never coming back.
It's hard. Yeah. It can be difficult.
But that's my worry for Supreme, is that they I'm sure they did a great deal, but they did a deal with someone who understands a very specific outlet and a specific set of outlets and a specific set of customers.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations to Carlyle Group for making that $1 billion net in a year. But again, in 3 to 5 years, we're going to see Supreme stores, and you are going to see 15% off stickers on the windows at the season's end.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's...
No, every company does
that. That's just what the business is. And I don't see a way around that.
Mm-hmm.
And for the people that disagree, for the people that think that that's a great outcome, or that they can become... they can maintain that aura of inevitability, then we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
You know? So
I don't think it's a bad or good outcome. I think it's a question of brand.
It's just different.
Yeah, that's right. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I wish every founder gets their day to just cash out and have fun for a little bit. It's what you pray for. It's what you hope for everyone. So in that sense, it's a good outcome. But as a sort of North Star, a guiding light of all these brands that are coming up that follow those same principles, it's somewhat of a letdown. I mean, to your earlier point with Rowing Blazers, I mean, what Jack and David, what they built there, without Supreme, we don't follow that same strategy.
Yeah.
There'll
be a new Supreme. Maybe there'll be a new Supreme.
Yeah, sure. I mean, hopefully that's something that we could do, or ALD, or NOAA. You know, there are a lot of brands that are coming up that are in that category of Supreme's grandchildren,
yeah,
essentially.
For sure.
No matter what specific type of apparel it is, mm-hmm. they're all cousins.
Yeah, that's right. Webb, anything I missed or anything else you want to cover?
No, I would really just like to understand where you are going next. I don't like to speculate on camera or on the mic, but I'm really excited to see what you are doing with sports books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I alluded to where I felt Barstool should mm-hmm. go next, and I guess I want to sort of delve into that really quickly.
Yeah, you're right. Like, we'll become more physical. We're an IP company at our core.
Yep.
I think you'll see us get into the live events business in a way that we are just teetering into now. We're not teetering, but we're seeing real opportunity with now. You're seeing us on physical products. We're seeing that. You know, one of the unique things about Barstool is not only do we create the mega brand and the sub mega brand, but then we have many, many brands that sit underneath that. Pink
right.
Whitney is a great example
yep.
of it. The Chiclets guys are capable of launching, you know, maybe not 100, but 10 other Pink Whitneys, right?
Sure.
Dave's capable of that too.
Whenever he feels like.
Whatever he feels like.
Yep.
Dave's a unicorn. Caller Daddy is the same way. Foreplay is the same way. So, I think we are a modern day Disney. It's just that we're not choosing to make theme parks or movies. We're making content for the internet. We're making products. Like Disney, we'll make physical experiences, whether those are bars, clubs, pizza places, those kind of things. What's our version of the amusement park? Maybe it's America's Member Guest Golf Tour.
Wow.
And I think you'll also see us become more virtual.
So to that extent, the second and only other question I have is, why not build the platform for the creation of all these creative projects that people are worried will vanish elsewhere?
Because I think that we have it in us to take on a brand. Like, I had a conversation about this yesterday. Like, there's so many brands that are left for dead on the wayside. Like, do you remember like the co-ed naked brand?
I do.
I'm like destroying the ability to use this, but like, who owns co-ed naked? Can you imagine how we could bring back co-ed
sure.
naked?
Sure.
There's 100 brands, 1,000 brands like that. Like, how we could bring back a brand that's been left for dead on the wayside and turn it into something new. I don't think that we are a company, though, where we take things that aren't, and I think this is why we're such a strong brand and portfolio of brands, is we're not great at adoption.
Okay. It has to start with you.
It has to feel organic to
right.
this place. Now,
so, but from the outside, was High Noon an adoption?
High Noon was a, ooh, we like that. We could get behind that and make it our own. So in some cases, we are adopting people.
Okay.
Like Wallow and Gilly is a great example. Like, two guys out of Philly, like, we've adopted the $1 million worth of game brand. Deion Sanders. We've adopted Deion
That's
Sanders.
That's awesome, by the way.
And we're creating a mashup with Deion Sanders.
I love it.
High Noon is kind of the same thing.
Okay.
But it, you know, the thing with us is someone here has to grab onto it, make it theirs, kind of like hug and love it up, and then it comes out. You know, High Noon turned into Nooners.
Sure.
And that's partly what made that so special.
It was remarkable to watch it happen in real time. No, that's all I have. It's fun to watch your team do what it does. And I wish that more folks took it seriously.
Mm.
You know? Whether you're a
Why don't you think they do? Because they don't understand it, or they diminish it?
There's that. And then there's just the fact that, you know, it's like Barstool is Barstool, and Barstool has a specific demo. And if you are not that demo, then you are unwilling.
Oh, people take us seriously.
Right.
Oh, I don't give a fuck.
Well, I know that. I know that. But I mean, there are, we talk about this all the time in every single community around media and commerce. It's like everything that you have done is what everyone should do. But people sometimes,
they'll write it off because it's us.
Right.
But and that's partly what makes the special sauce.
Yeah, sure. And that's your benefit.
Yeah.
But it's their detriment. It's to their detriment.
Yeah, I agree.
And it you know, it bothers me because I think that what's been done has been has been remarkable.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on, Webb. I appreciate it. Let's do this again.
Everybody knows One Fucking Good Thing is brought to you by High Noon. Everybody's obsessed with High Noon. I had a hockey game on Sunday night with my new tightly pulled up hockey socks. I played great. I had 3 goals. And I'm not great. I'm obviously the worst person on the ice, but that's fine. But then we went to have a few High Noons socially distanced with masks on in the parking lot, as you do these days. And all that was left was black cherry. And I was like, come on, people. Like, where's the pineapple? Where's the peach? Where's the watermelon? They obviously, all my hockey friends had drank those. But High Noon is a hard seltzer. Everybody wants it. It's impossible to find. It is very great tasting. You should load up and get some before you go into your holiday break. Unlike other hard seltzers, it's not like a fake beer. It's actual vodka. And it really only has 3 ingredients. Real vodka, real juice, and sparkling water. I think everybody can get behind that. It's also 100 calories and comes with great flavors, and you should find yourself some friends and hockey teammates that save you those great flavors, and that's High Noon. So my one fucking good thing today, I've actually been working on this project with Moon Man Sam. So Moon Man Sam is the guy, if you look, Kevin Clancy found him. Kevin Clancy finds all the good people here. So if you go to Kevin's, when we opened HQ3, we sat with all the creative, you know, we sat with all the podcast creative teams and we're like, what do you want your studio to look like? What do you want this to be like? What do you imagine is in here? What do you want on the walls? Like, what do you want for furniture? Blah, blah. Nobody answered us. Nobody paid attention except Kevin. And Kevin completely pimped out the KFC radio studio room. And it's awesome. He has a merch piece of it. He has shelves on the wall. And he has this an incredible mural of a moon man with the Barstool flag planted on the moon. It's awesome. So that's how we became introduced to Moon Man Sam, who's a graphic designer and artist. He then painted the studio wall in the radio room. So he painted all of the people on the railing, like the iconic New York picture. He then did our mural for Miami. There's a mural upstairs where he has all the characters and all the people at Barstool Sports. And he's working on a bunch of superheroes, a bunch of female superheroes for me. So for this holiday season, there's going to be a fun project that comes out. And that's my one fucking good thing. We're basically trying to create cartoon superheroes that map to ambitiously lazy, successfully insecure, and a hypersexualized submissive female. So I think it's pretty great. I can't wait for you guys to see it. That's today's episode. Huge thanks to Gary and Webb. Blackout Half Marathon is next Wednesday. Sign up. It's going to a great cause. Dye herself. As you guys know, all the proceeds go to Roots and Wings, which is Dye Keen's foundation and my friend Liz's foundation. Dye herself is going to run a mile, which is awesome. So if she can do that, you can run a few too. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a rating or give us a review. I'm at EKA Nardini. Token CEO is on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find us on TikTok or LinkedIn. And we have the illustrious Facebook group, which they tell me we are talking about the hot topic of college debt forgiveness. Think government's going to forgive debt? I mean, the government's got to fucking do something because all these small businesses are shut. Everybody's paying for college, but they're not going to college. Like, we got to figure out something. We just got to figure out something. So that's it. We'll see you back here on Monday. Here he lays, I'm down the road that I must track.